So we've been looking at this quarter, the kingdom of heaven, as God's answer to the question, what do I do now? Whenever we come face to face with our own mortality and realize that someday we're going to die, we ask ourselves the question, when we make that realization, what do I do now? And so we've been looking at that this quarter, talking about the kingdom, that it was God's plan from the beginning to have a group of people that would be with him in heaven forever. And that group of people is the kingdom. And that's why he created the earth. That's why he created the heavens. That's why he created man. And then Satan brought sin into the world and separated man from God. And so we've been talking about that this quarter. And the last couple of weeks now, we've been looking at Jesus in the kingdom. And we've looked at him as being the head, as the builder. And then on Wednesday evening, we talked about him being the cornerstone. And this morning, we're going to begin talking about him as the Redeemer. As the Redeemer. What was his role? What is the Redeemer? What's his role as a Redeemer? How does that relate to God's plan for doing away with the problem of sin that Satan entered into or brought into the world? And so we're going to begin this morning in 1 Peter 1, beginning in verse 15, where Peter writes, "But as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, because it is written, 'Be holy, for I am holy.'" Now that should be very familiar to most of us who've been here, because John's been preaching on that several times now, talking about the idea of holiness and us being holy. And he says in verse 17, "And if you call on the Father, who without partiality judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your stay here in fear, knowing that you are not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. He indeed was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but was manifest in these last times for you, who through him believe in God, who raised him from the dead and gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God." And so he says, knowing that you are not redeemed with corruptible things. What is the idea of being redeemed? Bought back. There's one more concept with the Greek word. It's freedom from slavery, but it's the idea you were bought back by a ransom being paid. By a ransom being paid. That's how you were bought back. That's how you were redeemed. So whenever we think about a ransom, what do we normally think about? Money. Somebody being kidnapped. And so if they're kidnapped, whose control are they under? The kidnapper. Someone else's control. They're not under their own control. And so it is necessary that someone else buy them back, pay the ransom, so that they can then be set free. And so Peter says that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver and gold. So this passage says that Christ redeemed us. Why don't we just redeem ourselves? Why don't we just pay the price? Why don't we just pay the ransom? We don't have what it takes. Why don't we have what it takes? We're corrupt. Why don't we just redeem ourselves? It's because we can't. It's because we can't. Because we're corrupt, because of all the other things. What kind of condition? So let's think about for just a minute. We really need to grasp as best we can that thought that we are under the control of someone else, in a sense. They're controlling us in such a way that they've taken us from the Lord. And there's nothing we can do about it. There's absolutely nothing that we can do about it. We need to grasp that. So why do we need to grasp that? Because it determines, it's really the foundation of how we live. Once we recognize our redemption, it's the foundation of how we live. It's the foundation of how we worship. It determines what our singing is to ourselves. It determines what our praying is. If we fully grasp the concept, the idea that we were out there lost and there was nothing we could do. Nothing we could do. In Titus chapter 2 and verse 13, Paul writes, looking for the blessed hope and glorious appearing of our great God and Savior Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us, that he might redeem us from every lawless deed. We're out there because of our deeds, because of what we've done. We've put ourselves in this situation where we can't do anything about it now. Where we can't do anything about it. Paul writes in Ephesians 2, beginning in verse 11, therefore remember that you once Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcision by what is called a circumcision made in the flesh by hands, that at that time you were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. Paul, we talked about this passage on Wednesday night. It's Paul talking to the Gentiles in the letter to the Ephesians. He's talking to the Gentiles in the church. And he says, at one time, you were without Christ. What does that mean, without Christ? Whenever we think about the word without, what does that indicate?
Absence.
Absence. It indicates you're over here,
separation,
and Christ is over here. And he says that's the condition you were in. You were separated from Christ. You were without, you did not have him. You did not have him. And it's interesting, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel. The word commonwealth is just a description of the type of government maybe that Israel had, because Kentucky, you'll hear the phrase, the commonwealth of Kentucky. But he says you're aliens, or you were aliens. What's the idea of being an alien?
Foreigner, outside the entity of what you want to be in. Or...
Right, you're not in what where you were. You're now somewhere else. You belong in this country, but you're not there. You're now in this country. You're not a citizen. And so if you're an alien, are you subject to, or are you allowed all the things that go with being a citizen in the country that you're an alien in?
No.
No. So you are, Paul describes it, being separated from Christ and being aliens. You're not where you are supposed to be. And strangers. So what's the difference between an alien and a stranger? They were to be separated, right?
They were.
You're not part of the group. Right, you're not part of the group. So think about it this way. Suppose that you were dropped in the middle of Moscow. How many of you speak Russian? Are you Russian? So that makes you an alien, right? Now you're in the middle of a country that is not your country. So you're now an alien in Russia. So if you can't speak Russian, and you've got a specific place you're trying to get to, how are you going to get there? Who are you going to go talk to and tell and say, hey, I need directions on how to get to this place? You don't speak Russian. They don't speak English. How are you going to get there? There's no such thing as an interpreter. There's no such thing as a wife. How would you feel if you could not communicate, if you're in a country where you cannot communicate, you can't go where you need to go, you can't find the things you need to find because you can't communicate, you can't speak? Let's put you in another place. They drop you in the middle of a rainforest in the Amazon where there's no one.
You're going to wander, but eventually you're lost.
You're going to wander because you don't know where to go. And you know what? There's nothing you can do about it. That's what it means to be separated and unable to redeem yourself. That's the idea, is that you're lost and there's nothing you can do. Nothing you can do. And when you grasp and understand that fully, it affects how you live, it affects how you worship, and it affects how you feel about your Redeemer. So it's going to affect everything that we talk about the rest of this quarter, is grasping that concept. You're lost and there's nothing you can do. Go back to our passage. 1 Peter 1 and verse 15. Knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers. Your aimless conduct. Isn't that wandering around in the middle of the rainforest in the Amazon? You're redeemed from that. But you are not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold. Normally those are the things that pay the ransom, right? In our minds anyway. And we talked about on Wednesday night the idea of those being precious. Precious being valuable. Being the most valuable. And so he says you weren't redeemed with silver or gold, but with the precious blood of Christ. With the precious blood of Christ. Precious being valuable. So it's interesting that he's comparing the blood of Christ as being valuable in relation to precious metals. So you weren't redeemed with this silver and gold, but with the blood of Christ, the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. Hebrews 9 and verse 11 says, but Christ came as a high priest of the good things to come with the greater and more perfect tabernacle not made with hands. That is, not of this creation. Not with the blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood he entered the most holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. When the Hebrew writer talking to these people who are going through the persecutions, and he's saying to them, if you go back under the old law, you're going to be lost because there's no salvation under the old law. He gets to chapter 9 and he begins to talk about Christ as a high priest. In chapter 8, he's talking about Christ as a high priest in comparison of the high priest under the old law and Christ being the high priest for them. He says that he entered the most holy place. What is the most holy place? Under the old law, what was the most holy place? It's where the high priest went in to do what? What did he take in? The blood. For what purpose? For what? The atonement of the sins. Who was in the most holy place? The high priest. And who is he taking the blood to? God. Isn't that where God was? Was in the most holy place? And who was allowed to go in there? Only the high priest. And all the things that he had to go through to cleanse his physical body and everything before he could go in and approach the Lord, approach God. But he went in with the blood of bulls and goats and calves and lambs and those kind of things as an atonement for who? For the people. For the people. And so the point that the Hebrew writer is making is that Christ, as a high priest, when he entered the holy place, he didn't go in with the blood of goats and calves. He went in with his own blood. So when he goes into the most holy place with his own blood, what's he doing? He's paying the ransom. He's paying the ransom. Revelation 5 and verse 6. And I looked, and behold, in the midst of the throne and of the four living creatures, and in the midst of the elders stood a lamb as though it had been slain. The context of Revelation 5 actually begins in Revelation 4 with the throne scene. And it continues into chapter 5. And so in chapter 5 in verse 6, John says, I looked and behold in the midst of the throne of the four living creatures, in the midst of the elders stood a lamb as though it had been slain. What's the picture that John is painting that he saw? The throne scene with a slain lamb in the middle of it. When you think of the slain lamb, and John talked about this when we studied Revelation, what pictures in your mind? A bloody lamb. Representative of Christ. And what's Christ doing? Going to his Father and offering his blood in payment of the ransom. For what purpose? To redeem us, to buy us back. Because why? Because we can't buy ourselves back. Because we can't buy ourselves back. He came as a high priest of the good things to come with the greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is not of this creation, not with the blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood. How do we understand what it meant for Christ to offer himself? What is it that God did with the Jewish nation, the Israelites, that would help us understand what it meant that Christ went with his own blood? And I've kind of talked about it a little bit, but I want us to think about it. How do we know what that meant? Because what did he do under the old law? Sacrifice the best they had. Talked about the high priest. And I've talked about what an awesome God we have, that he laid out all this physical things that the Israelites had to do, so that when Christ came, we would know what it meant. So God had the Israelites to have the priesthood and to have the high priest. And it wasn't just by accident that he said, let's have a high priest and we'll just have one high priest that goes in. And that's not the way. This was all on purpose. This was all on purpose. He had them describe the lamb and the sacrifice. You remember, in one of the sacrifices, they were supposed to offer a red heifer. And there was something that would disqualify that red heifer from being able to be sacrificed. Do you remember what it was? They had to inspect it for what? That's right, to be sure it was all red. If it had one white hair, it was disqualified. It was disqualified. Why did God have them go to such an extent? So that it would establish the necessity of the perfection of the sacrifice. Absolutely. How difficult it is to be able to find a red heifer that way. And remember, we looked at some of the prophecies where if you came and you offered those things that were less than perfect, God rejected them and said, go offer them to your governors and see how they'll accept them. So God established the priesthood under the old law. He established the high priest under the old law. He established the processes that they had to go through. He established the perfection of the sacrifices, so that when Christ offered his blood, we would understand the perfection of that sacrifice. We would understand the necessity of that sacrifice. And we would understand the purpose of that sacrifice. All these years, the Israelites were going through this year after year after year for the purpose of themselves, in God testing them and seeing if they would obey, but that wasn't the ultimate purpose. The ultimate purpose was so that when Christ came, the people in the first century and on could understand the importance of Jesus offering his blood. The importance of Jesus offering his blood. And whenever you grasp and understand how lost we were, the importance of that sacrifice increases exponentially. The importance of that sacrifice, because we were strangers, we were wandering around, lost, with no hope. That's what he said in Ephesians when he was talking to the Gentiles. You were without hope, you were without God, and you were wandering around aimlessly. You were wandering around aimlessly. So what I'm trying to do is to create a picture in your mind, because that's what Jesus did with his parables, and that's part of the purpose. Whenever I think about Jesus offering himself, offering his own blood as a ransom, the high priest under the old law went into the most holy place with the blood of another, offering it to God. Christ went into the holy place, heaven, where God is, and he offered himself. And I picture in my mind, I picture him standing before his Father, showing him the nails, where the nails were driven in his hands, offering himself and saying, I did it. Now they don't have to die, because he paid the ransom. And we were totally separated and lost. And now we don't have to die. We don't have to be separated, because now we can be reconciled back to the Father, so that we can spend eternity with him. That's what he's wanted all along. That's what we've been talking about all along, is God wants a people that he can spend an eternity with. And look at what all he's done to make that happen. To make that happen. And we've talked about the fact that he knew all this was going to happen before creation he ever created anything. He knew that this was going to happen. And his Son, who was with him at creation and participated in creation, knew what he was going to have to do even before they created everything. And if you remember in 1 Peter, when we looked at how the prophets and the angels and everything desired to look and try to understand what God was doing in order to redeem man. Because they didn't know. But they wanted to know. And they were searching, it says, diligently, looking to try to understand. Because they understood that it was God's plan from the beginning to have man, to have men with him. So why is it that everyone doesn't accept, doesn't obey? Part of it is because there's several reasons. Part of it is because they don't understand the condition that they're in.
They don't feel the separation.
That's part of it. Part of it's because they don't feel, they don't understand. And part of it is they don't want to. Not that they don't want to understand, but they don't want to be a part. Because why? They don't understand eternity. They don't understand the punishment.
It requires commitment.
It requires that you live.
I don't think they understand the covenant of God. That in the beginning, the covenant always covenant was for the covenant is ratified. It must be from the Old Testament times to the New Testament times, with Christ giving himself, knowing that he had to be blood. People don't understand.
Absolutely. They don't understand the importance of the blood being sacrificed and understand what all it did and how that ties us and links us to God. There's another idea that we need to think about. When Jesus offered himself, what he showed us was a great love. A great love for someone else. A great love for someone else. That he was willing to do it, absolutely. And one of my great concerns is that in the country that we live in, and you're seeing it more and more and more and more right now, is it's all about me. It's all about me. And what I'm saying to you is what Jesus demonstrated in the offering of his blood is that it's not about me. But it's about everyone else. And we need to be very, very careful that we don't allow that thinking, that mindset, to get into us. And we become selfish. And we don't do some of the things that we need to do for one another because it's inconvenient. Or, you know, it's going to affect me in some way. Sometimes we have to sacrifice in order to do what we're supposed to do. So ultimately, we're here not for ourselves, but for everyone else. Is that not what Jesus did when he paid the ransom to buy us back? Is that not what he's saying? It's all about you. You, not you individually. Jesus is saying it's all about you. It's our responsibility, our purpose on this earth is to serve the Lord. That's why we're here, is to serve the Lord. In serving the Lord, what do? We serve others. How do we serve the Lord? By serving others. And we need to be careful that we don't allow ourselves that mindset that it's about me. You know, it's inconvenient for me, and we become selfish because that is the opposite of what we're supposed to be. And Jesus gave us the ultimate example when he offered his blood to the Father as a ransom to buy us back when we were totally lost and there was nothing we could do about it. Questions or comments before we end? I'm going to... That's right.
That concept is growing day by day.
And one of the passages that I did not get to is Romans 5 and verse 9, where it says that Jesus saved us from wrath. Whenever he paid the ransom and bought us back, not only was he bringing us back because we couldn't bring ourselves back, but he was also paying the price to satisfy the wrath of God, so that we did not have to experience the wrath of God. And you're exactly right, Dave. That's a very popular teaching and concept in the world today, and it is deadly spiritually. Very much so. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, no. Yep. Appreciate your comments very much, and we will pick up talking about his authority and his throne on Wednesday evening.